there's no greater burden than representing an innocent person. You have to win. You don't have a choice. You have to win.
Hi, this is Brooke, and you're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast dedicated to spreading awareness of wrongful conviction. This week, we're going to learn about and meet the amazing team at the Arizona Justice Project. I was so impressed by everyone that I talked to from the project. It almost felt like we were old friends. I was recently told via review that at least one specific reviewer would prefer that I keep my eye on the target and not stop to identify areas of discrimination. In the mentioned reference, specifically, it was against women. I wanted to let you know that I appreciate all the support and to remind people that justice is the target of my advocacy and discrimination against anyone is not just. To celebrate women over making them feel as if their unique needs are not important, two of our three sponsors this week are designed just for us. It includes Lola and Third Love. And even though both of these products are designed for use by women, there are definite benefits to the significant others of women, like not having to go to the store to buy feminine hygiene products, or having to stare uncomfortably at the wall while your significant other is getting fitted for a bra. This episode is also brought to you by Blue Apron, an amazing supporter of many podcasts. I want to talk to you about Lola. And to be completely honest, I have hoped for this sponsorship for a very long time. Lola is a female-founded company for organic tampons, pads, and liners, and they're delivered straight to your door, based on the frequency of you and your body's unique needs. I mean, really, you know your body best, so you can tailor your Lola experience to perfectly fit your needs. You decide which products, tampons, pads, and liners, or a combination of those things, which are all 100% organic cotton, that you need. Did you know that the FDA doesn't even require feminine care products to list their ingredients? So most of them don't. A lot of major brands even use a mix of synthetic ingredients and are treated with harsh chemicals. You can decide which assortment of products are right for you and your unique needs and how many products you need and how often. It's totally customizable. Plus, you can cancel, skip an order, or modify your subscription at any time. And you get an email reminder when your products are on the way. I especially love that Lola prides themselves on having no surprises or gimmicks. On top of being a natural product for your body, there's even an environmentally friendly option of a non-applicator tampon. When my first shipment of Lola arrived, I noticed the adorable box with the great message on the inside. You can check out the pictures on my social media. It was so convenient that it was shipped right to my door, and it fits perfectly with my desire to not introduce any unnecessary chemicals into my body. So here's one of the best parts. You can get 60% off your first order by visiting mylola.com and entering promo code ACTUAL when you subscribe. I mean, how could it get any better? It's convenient, organic, and designed by women. Plus, you get 60% off by using the promo code ACTUAL at mylola.com. So picture it. Or really, you could listen to it if you go back to season 2, episodes 7 and 8, when I was at the Innocence Network conference on a panel with Susan Simpson from Undisclosed. She is one of my favorite people. We were talking about how important podcasting can be in advocating for the wrongfully convicted. After the presentation, I was approached by two very nice women, Leslie and Lindsay from the Arizona Justice Project. They expressed interest in learning how to do a podcast, which warmed my heart because I really love podcasts and I love the Innocent Network agencies. So a podcast combining those two things is a win-win. I was surprised and overwhelmingly grateful when I was contacted again a few weeks later asking if I would be willing to make the trip to Arizona. I'm going to have Leslie help me explain how I got there.
I had heard about you prior to the Innocence Conference in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
And so since at our project, we had thought about podcasting and wanted to do podcasts, with ours, we were going to start it a little differently and do some podcasts for sort of to help educate the public, mm-hmm. you know, like doing one on false confessions, doing podcast on prosecutorial misconduct, since one of the things that our project addresses is manifest injustice, doing a podcast on eyewitness misidentification, mm-hmm. things like this that, you know, really people are pretty interested in because they think, why would anyone ever confess to a crime they didn't commit?
Right.
So we wanted to do ones on general topics and then get into podcasting about our specific exonerees. And so, you know, we started on that. And during the course of that, I heard about you. And so then when we were going to be at the National Innocence Conference in San Diego, I wanted to be sure and meet you. So I saw that you were going to be on a panel and I went to your panel.
That's amazing.
Yes. And it was great. And I learned a lot, but there was so much more that I wanted to know specifically because of our podcast that we wanted to do at our project.
Was it because of my sophisticated closet studio?
It was your sophisticated closet studio. That was what drew me in at the very beginning. So then I went and found you outside, and you were so helpful right away telling me, okay, this is what I do. This is what you can do on a budget. You know, you can get this microphone and that microphone. And well, I got mine at a good deal on eBay, but right. you know, if you look around, you can find that. And then I had also already heard that you had wanted to come to Arizona.
I did.
And so I thought, oh, that's great. So after the Innocence Conference, I emailed you, and you continued to help me on things we should do. And then you said, I said, well, can you come to Arizona? And you said, yes, you could. And so one of our board members, Lee Stein, had some, I put out a call and said, does anybody have any frequent flyer points, you know, because Brooke's on the East Coast and we're out here in Arizona. And so Lee Stein said, yes, I have some. And so we made the arrangements with you, and you were doing another podcasting episode in Baltimore. And so we had you come out, and then I was really happy that you were going to stay with us. And
me too.
The first day we left our house and we're driving down the street, and Brooke said, oh, there's a cactus.
Wasn't just a regular cactus. It was like a ginormous cactus.
It was a beautiful big saguaro. But the thing is, they're in right. everyone's yards around here. We're so used to them. We never even think about them. And she was so excited about it, that it was really cute. You know,
amazing.
And thank goodness it wasn't the season for oranges and lemons, because I think she would have torn out of the car to see those.
Yeah, no, it was amazing.
That night, we had a family-style dinner, including Leslie and family, and also Lindsay Herf, the executive director of the Arizona Justice Project. We even talked a little bit that evening.
My name is Lindsay Herf. I am the executive director for the Arizona Justice Project. A lot of innocence projects have started through law schools, mm-hmm. through professors who at one time practiced or maybe still took on cases, who also realized that law students were a great use of labor and gave them a real life experience of working a case, and also allowed them to develop a clinic. So our project was formed as a nonprofit. Yeah. So we have been a 501c3 nonprofit organization for 18 years. Since 2008, we have been housed at the ASU Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. So that has been our home. But what essentially funds us is a combination of we've received federal grants, we've received private foundation grants, and private donations. The project was founded in 1998 by an attorney named Larry Hammond and the Arizona Attorneys for Criminal Justice. The project for the first 10 years was all pro bono efforts from attorneys in Phoenix and Tucson, law professors at both ASU and U of A law schools, and private investigators. Inmates, there was a news article when the project was founded, And, you know, news does circulate outside, you know, world news does circulate in the prison system. And letters started coming in to the project, which then was housed out of the founder's law firm. And so volunteer attorneys would take cases and start reviewing them and seeing, you know, what they could do. And so for the first 10 years, it was an all-volunteer project. And then in 2008, the project received a Bar Foundation grant as well as a National Institute of Justice grant to look to have funding to pay for post-conviction DNA testing, which was the first time in our project's history to have money to pay for DNA testing. Before then, we didn't really take on too many DNA cases because they can be very expensive. So 2008 was a really big year for us because it allowed the project to bring on staff for the first time.
Tell me about your path, like personally, professionally, to get there in 2008.
Sure. Okay. I went to law school in San Diego at California Western School of Law. The California Innocence Project is based out of that law school. And so when I was in law school, CIP, the California Innocence Project, is the biggest thing at Cal Western. To be a CIP clinic student, they only take 12 a year. There's usually about 100 students vying, you know, competing for those 12 spots. And I applied not because I wanted to be a criminal law attorney, but because I found law school lonely. In college, I was an athlete, I was on teams, I was part of groups. In my first year of law school, it was me studying. And so I thought being a part of CIP would be an opportunity to work with other students towards a common goal. And so that was the main reason I even tried out. I got into it, and I loved it. I loved the work. I learned so much. I didn't really know much about wrongful convictions or even how the system could go wrong before being exposed to that. I loved the investigation. I loved learning from Justin Brooks and Jan Stiglitz, who are, you know, the lead professors and attorneys of that project at that time. So that really changed my career path. And then once I graduated from law school, I was lucky enough, the stars came into alignment here in Arizona, because that was the year that the Justice Project received funding, and I came on board at that time to work here in Arizona for the Arizona Justice Project.
We need to take a second to talk about Third Love, one of my new favorite companies for women. Ladies, stop tugging at your bra straps and second-guessing your size. It's time to put fit first with Third Love, a bra and underwear company for real women. Third Love uses real women's measurements and super smoothing memory foam to create bras that fit better and are more comfortable. They offer sizes from AA to G, as well as their exclusive half cup sizes. Just answer a few simple questions online, and Third Love will recommend a bra in the right size and style for you. And now, Third Love is offering you a chance to try one of their perfect 24/7 bras free for 30 days. You just pay $2.99 for shipping, and you're on your way to a perfect fit. And you get to really live in this bra. It's so comfortable, you might even forget that you're wearing it. And if Third Love isn't your new favorite bra, just return it or exchange it for free. So go to thirdlove.com/actual now to get your perfect Third Love bra and try it for 30 days. That's thirdlove.com/actual to try your new favorite bra for free. thirdlove.com/actual. I also wanted to give a special thank you shout out to Third Love. I told them about an incident that I had trying to gain entrance as a visitor to a prison because of the metal clasps in the back of my wireless bra. It set off the metal detector. Not only did they find out the information I needed to see if their wireless bra would fit my needs, but they also passed the information I gave them onto their design team to see if they could help other women who need bras with the same specifications. That was really above and beyond. And so please, I'm hoping you can help me thank them for their support by giving them a shout out on social media. I had done some research on the Arizona Justice Project, and I read about their cases of what is referred to as manifest injustice. This was a new concept to me, and so I asked Lindsay if she could give me some insight on how that might make their screening process different from other projects.
So our screening process is similar to pretty much every other innocence organization. The vast amount of our work is dedicated to identifying the innocent. However, as you know, we do take on what we call cases of manifest injustice. And in the screening process, we will look for things such as, you know, what was the crime and what was the sentence. Often, though, there's little that we can do. The best example of the manifest injustice success case, one of the success cases that we've had, is Lewis Harper's, who was convicted for a crime that occurred in 1989, a $20 drug deal, and he received a stacked sentence of 50 years in total. He had exhausted all legal avenues, and so we found a creative way of working with the prosecutors to overturn his conviction and plea him out. So he was not exonerated, but his 50-year sentence turned into a 23-year sentence, and he was released. But in terms of screening, for the manifest injustice cases, you know, it really depends on the case. And unfortunately, like a lot of other innocence projects, we do have to reject a number of people based on the fact that legal claims have already been presented to the courts and they've lost and they can't relitigate those claims. Even if we're looking at it and we think it's a valid claim. And sometimes, you know, it honestly depends on the case. Arizona was an anomaly with battered women syndrome being a defense not until the 90s. And so we looked at and have represented three different women who were battered and abused women, and two of which we represented in front of the Board of Executive Clemency. So in terms of the manifest injustice, it's not always a legal avenue that we pursue. So sometimes our manifest injustice clients are people that we end up representing in front of the Board of Executive Clemency to try to get them a commutation, which would be a shortening of the sentence and allow them to regain their freedom. Sometimes it's parole if they have a sentence that makes them parole eligible.
I asked Lindsay how the project had changed since her first day.
So when I started, we had an executive director and we had an administrative kind of assistant who was an attorney and helped screen cases. And I was hired to implement what was a joint program with the Arizona Attorney General's office. It was a Bloodsworth post-conviction DNA testing grant. And at that time, our executive director, who also taught at ASU, had an office. My colleague Katie was in essentially a conference room with a computer. I was in an office of a professor who was on sabbatical. So I had, you know, could use the office for the semester until she returned. So that is how we were set up. Our case files were in a locked room in the law library. So we didn't even have enough space for our case files to be in the same room that we were in. And after a few months, our office then became in the basement of the law library. Essentially, they pulled down a few stacks of books and put up some drywall, and that was our office. And I think Katie and I both loved that office because it was quiet. It was kind of our space. All of our cases were in there. Our law student interns would come in there, and they had, you know, their own separate kind of conference room to work in. And that then became our home for a number of years until we moved downtown. And now we're in the brand new ASU Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law building in downtown Phoenix.
We were just in a room and I got introduced to a lot of people. How many of those people are paid employees? Are those all paid employees?
Right now we have 5 paid employees.
I was fortunate enough to meet many of the people involved in the Arizona Justice Project, and I learned the different but necessary roles that they played.
My name is Katie Pazowskis, and I am the supervising legal clinic attorney for the post-conviction clinic at ASU Law School, and I'm also a contract lawyer for the Arizona Justice Project. I've been doing innocence work for about 8.5 years. So I assist in the review of innocence claims from Arizona prisoners and also claims of manifest injustice. More recently, I've been working on cases involving juvenile offenders sentenced to life without parole.
My name is Kelly Dodd, and I am a paralegal with Arizona Justice Project.
My name is Kendra Fleming, and I'm the staff attorney at the Arizona Justice Project. I've been here for about 3.5 years, almost 4, and I investigate the cases and litigate them. If we get into litigation, I work with students and oversee their work on our cases.
My name is Shawnee. I've been with the Arizona Justice Project for about 2 years now. I am the operations manager, which means I take care of everything non-attorney related. That could be board development, all interns and externs, volunteer attorneys. I oversee all of the cases, so making sure that they're moving and progressing forward or that they're ending and they need to be closed. I do all of the intake as well, so opening up letters when they come in, or Kelly opens up the letters when they come in. I'll go through them. I'll assign them. I'll see if our students are going to work on them, if we're going to investigate them or close them down if we've already looked at them in the past or that type of a thing.
I wondered how the project had grown in the view of the helpers and how they had grown in their positions.
I could say that I knew very little about the criminal justice system before coming into this and not having anyone who had been in it or a part of it. And so just my understanding of how it works and how unfair it can be, and how even slated it is, I think, for, you know, certain individuals has been very eye-opening and interesting to me. It's been amazing to kind of see the number of attorneys who are in it because they really believe in the work that they're doing and the heart that they have and the number of hours that they put in has just been amazing.
I started with the Justice Project in January, but I started working with the post-conviction clinic in August, the first day of August, so 2016.
I've been here, what, like 6 hours, and you've been here, you know, almost just under a year. So I think that everybody is really friendly and like helpful. Is that, am I right? Am I making the right impression?
It's wonderful. It is. When they mentioned that I might be working it with the post-conviction clinic, I was thinking, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like that. And I absolutely fell in love with it. It's like putting a puzzle together and getting all the pieces to fit. I do. I love it. I'm so grateful.
My job evolved into more of a case coordinator position, and that was because we ended up getting a grant from the Bureau of Justice Assistance, which allowed me to kind of, you know, my work sort of evolved, and I was working more with law students, assigning them to cases, coordinating those cases, making sure that we were moving forward, working with the prisoners. I was assigned to some of those cases, too, so I got to do more casework at that time. And then Carrie Sperling ended up taking a job at the Wisconsin Innocence Project, so she left the Arizona Justice Project, and that's when Lindsay and I became co-directors. I really started doing a lot of the management of the nonprofit organization, so financial management, fundraising, event planning, still coordinating cases and reporting on grants, because we had a couple grants going on at the time, and really just kind of doing the day-to-day management of the organization, board development, things like that. Lindsay ended up taking a job with the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers in 2013, and so she moved to D.C., and I became the director of the project. And I worked in that position for 2 years, 2014, 2015. And I was still working cases, but I was really more involved in the management of the nonprofit organization. Our board had grown significantly. It grew from, I think, 9 directors to 22. Oh, wow. Or something like that. It really expanded. And we started to implement policies and procedures We all became employees of the organization and got benefits that we never had before. So we really grew over the years, and we started to sort of implement these different policies. And then it was in 2015, January of 2015, that I got the job here as with the post-conviction clinic. And I started working in this role.
We'll be back in just a second after our final sponsor break. I am so glad that Blue Apron is such a huge supporter of podcasts. I love them. A lot. So much, in fact, that when I was traveling last week, I had my Blue Apron box delivered to my friend Rachel's house to share the deliciousness. I was surprised not only did my friend Rachel love the Blue Apron, but her teenage son also loved the experience. I've asked them to talk a little bit about their Blue Apron experience with me.
I never realized how much I loved cooking until I started to make fresh, delicious, home-cooked meals with my mom, thanks to Blue Apron. We've never eaten better.
With step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe cards and pre-proportioned ingredients, it's all the fun of home cooking without the hassle.
And with Blue Apron's freshness guarantee, we can always rest assured we're eating something we can feel good about.
So, check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/actual. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/actual.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Sometimes people tell me about what they call an aha moment, a time when they realized that they were in the right field. And I asked the members of the Arizona Justice Project if they had those particular types of moments.
I don't know if I've had an aha moment. I think that when I got started doing this work in 2006 as a law student at the California Innocence Project, we studied a few wrongful convictions. The year that I was in the clinic, Timothy Atkins was exonerated. So as a student, I was there to watch the evidentiary hearings. I was there to see how the end process, can unfold. We were successful. So I was there, the day that he was released after he was in prison for nearly 20 years and saw him reunited with his family. And that kind of blew me away. The idea that somebody could be locked up for, such a long period of time for something that he didn't commit, and how that affects not just him, how that affects the justice system in general, with a true perpetrator still being at large, how that affected his family, and then how he, could rebuild his life. So, in 2006, I knew of a few exonerations. Today, over 10 years later, there's over 2,000 documented cases. And really, when it gets hard, I think of the exonerees. I think of the exonerees who have been my clients, our project's clients, other exonerees around the country that I've met, and what they've been through and how they've, pursued, so many down turns in life. And it is really the exonerees that lift me up and make me want to continue doing this work.
I have them all. I have those feelings all the time.
Yeah.
Honestly, nearly every day. And you'll get a letter from somebody you've been working with thanking you for your work, or you'll have a success, which are few and far between, but those make it all worth it. Even the days where we have losses and you're kind of down and out, you still feel like, okay, I got to keep going. I got to keep moving forward. This isn't the end. We need to proceed. We got to keep a positive attitude because we have somebody whose life is in the balance, and we need to be strong. We need to be there for them. Really every day I feel very, very fortunate to work with the people I work with and to be doing this type of work.
Yeah. And I think I've had a couple of them.
I mean, the Innocence Conference is just a mass gathering of exonerees and the lawyers and support system that work on these cases. But when somebody, you know, to hear our clients talk about what the Justice Project means to them, or most recently our client Eddie Collins stand up in front of a classroom or his family, and he jokingly calls Katie and I his angels and wants to stand next to us in photos. I mean, it's flattering, but more so it's like when we were denied at the Clemency Board in 2014 and I was just fit to be tied because it was beyond horrendous, that hearing. And giving up was an option. And now, full circle, now that he's released, I think this is why we do it. This is why we do it, to see the joy in his face, and he gets to spend the rest of his life in freedom, you know, and having his freedom, I should say. But that's why we do what we do. It's not easy, it's not quick, and it's not everyone's on board. Well, I'll just say that.
I feel like I've had lots of those. I'm trying to remember them all. I think I love, so I track every time a case gets closed. And sometimes when a case is closed, that means we've been successful. And so even when Eddie got out March 10th, a couple of weeks ago, it was being able to transfer his name off of our spreadsheet. And not it being a closed, we couldn't help him, but a closed we won and where we were successful was this kind of amazing and fun feeling.
I do. And the Justice Project and the clinic and some social workers we've been working with. We all worked on a hearing, a parole hearing for an inmate. And the response we got back from that inmate, it gave me chills. And how much our believing in him helped him to believe in himself. And I mean, that's what makes it all worth it, absolutely.
Through my entire day of interviewing, Leslie was with me. She was my hostess, my tour guide, and she even took my picture with the biggest cactus that I have ever seen in my entire life. But more importantly than all of that, she is one of the most friendly, caring, and compassionate people that I have ever met. We had a chat before she dropped me off for my flight, and even now, when I listen, I can hear the sparkle in her personality.
Hey, I'm Leslie Hoyt-Croft, and I'm the documentarian at the Arizona Justice Project, which has a lot of different, it covers a lot of different territory. I make documentary films about some of our clients and exonerees, and I do segments about what the project does, and then I do all the photography of the project events so they can put it on their website.
And it is my understanding that you are a volunteer in all of these services.
You know, I am so appreciative of the Justice Project and all the people who work there that I am very happy to be a pro bono participant there. You know, it feels like a one big family with...
It really does.
Not only the board members, the staff, the attorneys, but also the people we work with who are some of them currently in prison and some of them who have gotten out and some who've done really well since they've gotten out and the ones who have not done well. You know, when we go to Tucson, we have one of our exonerees who's living at a bus station in the women's bathroom. Right. And we go and find him and, you know, we enjoy him as much as anybody.
And you let him know that somebody cares. Even
yes.
If you're living in the bus station,
oh, yeah.
We got your back.
Yes, we all care about him, and and he's a character.
The other night we were watching one of the films that you put together, and you told me about this person, and his issue with, like, race in the prison system. So I was just wondering if you could retell that story for listeners.
Well, this is Lewis Taylor, and Lewis is a person who was, at the age of 16, he was accused and ultimately tried and convicted of setting the Pioneer Hotel in Tucson, Arizona in 1971, I believe. He was in prison for 42 years. So he finally was released 4 years ago. Oh. And so in the meantime, I'm working on a documentary about Lewis, but in the meantime, I did a music video about him, and Carlos Arzate, a musician in Tucson, completely separate from me, from the Justice Project, he just heard about Lewis's case, and he said he just felt so moved by the injustice of it that he wrote a song called The Ballad of Lewis Taylor. And so that's what I put the video to, was Carlos's beautiful song about The Ballad of Lewis Taylor. And so anyhow, we, the project, have, you know, tried to provide things for Lewis after he got out. So when Lewis and I got out, Lindsay Herf, who's now director of the Justice Project, and I went to visit Lewis in Tucson. And, you know, I was interviewing him for this documentary, which is still in the process, and just talking to him. And Lindsay said, let me back up for a minute and give you a little background on Lewis. Lewis is half Hispanic and half Black. His mother and his siblings, the father wasn't in the home, they only spoke Spanish in the home. He's half African-American, so he presents as an African-American, but he's completely fluent in Spanish and,
right,
you know, identifies in many ways in that way. So at least in Arizona, the prisons are very segregated on race. And so Lindsay said to Lewis, well, Lewis, when you were in prison and there were fights between the Mexican contingents and the African-American groups, what side did you go on? And Lewis said, well, Lindsay, he said, I would just go in the corner and beat myself up. And
that's so sad, but it, like, I know.
We both burst out laughing because it was,
right,
the way he said it, I'd just go in the corner and beat himself up. And we laughed, and he goes, no, I'm serious. He said, you know, I didn't fit in with either group, but I couldn't come out unscathed, essentially. So he just knocked himself around.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, you can imagine how difficult that would be.
I'm going to close with some words from a board member of the Arizona Justice Project. His name is Lee Stein, and I was really touched by what he said.
I'm Lee Stein. I'm on the board of directors of the Arizona Justice Project. Larry Hammond, who's the founder of the project, asked me to work on a case, and I did, and it was really the most powerful experience in my career. And then he asked me to be on the board, and I readily said yes.
Like, I've been interviewing people all day, and I've been asking about, like, what was your aha moment? Do you have one big moment?
So, you know, we represented a client of the Justice Project who was in prison for 37 years for a crime he didn't commit, and a truly extraordinary guy. And to be in the courtroom and watch the sheriff's deputy take the shackles off his arms, his hands and legs was, you know, I mean, I get choked up just thinking about it.
Right.
And then watching him walk out of prison was, you know, a moment I'll never forget. And, you know, when you're in law school, you think that's what being a lawyer is. And those are the moments that you're going to get. And you really don't get those moments. You review documents, you file motions, you do all the things that that lawyers do, which is good and it's a great job and all that kind of stuff. But you think when you're in law school that you're going to make a difference and that you're going to affect change and affect people's lives. And when you actually get to, it knocks you over. And, you know, when I think about the impact that that case had on me. So the first Christmas after our client was released, he sent me a Christmas card. And his Christmas card said, "Thank you for giving me the gift of freedom." I mean, you finally feel like you're putting your money where your mouth is, and you're actually being a lawyer. Larry Hammond is revered in this legal community, and he's a great lawyer, a great person who does more than anybody else does. And so at the time, I was practicing with Jordan Green, another board member, and Larry sent Jordan and I the materials in this case. And he said, you know, I'd like you to consider taking this case over from the project. And so before reading it, I walked into Jordan's office and I said, "We're not going to do this, right? I mean, this is going to cost us a fortune. It's going to take a ton of time. It's not going to be successful. They never are. There's no way we're going to do this, right?" And he says, "Right, but we owe it to Larry to read the stuff and talk to him." So I said, "Okay, fine." We both agreed to take it home over the weekend and read it. So we did, and I came back, and on Monday I walked back into his office and I said, "We have to do the case, right?" And he said, "Right, we have to do the case." And so we went to Larry's house and sat with him and talked about it. And, you know, I said, "Is this a fair representation of the facts?" And he said, "No, it's not." I said, "Yeah, I didn't think so." He says, "No, the facts are better than this." And I said, "Come on, Larry, it can't be." He said, oh, no. And so we said, "Okay, we're in." And we went back to our law firm. And at the time, I was at a big law firm with Jordan. And, you know, we had a bunch of former judicial clerks who had clerked on Arizona courts and that kind of stuff. And we thought that, you know, we might be able to get one or two of them to help us. And so we put out the word, and we got permission from the firm. And, you know, all 10 people we talked to said, "Absolutely, I'm in." And, the team worked unbelievably hard. And everybody who worked on the case, I think, says it's the highlight of their career. And all of them went down, met with the clients, met with them in prison, had the full experience, was in the courtroom when he was released. There's no greater burden than representing an innocent person. You have to win. You don't have a choice. You have to win.
I'm Brooke. Thanks for listening. A special thanks to our sponsors, Lola, Third Love, and Blue Apron, for sponsoring today's episode. Remember, if you can't financially support our sponsors, you can still help by giving them a shout out on social media and thanking them for their support. Visit our website, actualinpod.com, for more information. And remember to check out our new podcast, Convicted. Our theme song is by Andy Cohen. So, until next time, listen, learn, and advocate for justice. Thanks again, and always, for listening.